Hello everyone. Today I would like to talk to you about a different sort of book. The past few books that I featured on my podcast were YA fantasy novels. However, this week I would like to talk to you about a contemporary rom-com sort of book. It's called The Unhoneymooners. So The Unhoneymooners is the antithesis of a romantic comedy, if you ask me. It starts off with twins, one of whom is very lucky and getting married. The other thinks that she is the epitome of bad luck. The sister who's getting married won all these sweepstakes and giveaways and is having this really, really budget-friendly wedding because of it. The bad luck sister, however, just can't seem to get her life together. She's never won a contest. She's ripped her clothing at the most inopportune time. She even winds up ripping her bridesmaid's dress at the beginning of this book. Well, winning all those sweepstakes did sort of cause an issue when the sister's wedding had a bout of food poisoning breakout from one of the vendors who was serving the wedding. So the now wedded sister and her groom have food poisoning and are unable to attend their 10-day honeymoon excursion. And who better to take their place than her maid of honor and best man? So Olive and Ethan make their way out to Maui to this super romantic, incredibly perfect 10-day honeymoon getaway where they have to follow the very strict rules set by the sweepstakes of acting as if they're married, even though, plot twist, they absolutely cannot stand one another. If it was up to them, they'd both be on opposite sides of the island. However, when you're pretending to be married, that doesn't exactly work. Now, while they're on their honeymoon, they both run into very important people in their lives and still have to go with this, oh yeah, we're married phase, even though it's an outright lie. That being said, let me read you the first chapter of The Unhoneymooners. In the calm before the storm, in this case, the blessed quiet before the bridal suite is overrun by the wedding party, my twin sister stares critically down at the freshly painted shell pink fingernails and says, I bet you're relieved I'm not a bridezilla. She glances across the room at me and smiles generously. I bet you expected me to be impossible. It is a statement so perfectly dropped in a moment, I want to take a picture and frame it. I share a knowing look with our cousin, Julieta, who is repainting Amy's toes. It should be more of a petal pink than a baby pink, don't you think? And gesture to the bodice of Amy's wedding gown, which hangs from a satin hanger and on which I am presently and painstakingly ensuring that every sequin is lying flat. Define bridezilla. Amy meets my eyes again, this time with a half-hearted glare. She's in her fancy wedding bra contraption and skimpy underwear that I'm aware, with some degree of sibling nausea, her dude bro fiancé Dane will positively destroy later. Her makeup is tastefully done, and her fluffy veil is pinned in her upswept dark hair. It's jarring. I mean, we're used to looking identical while knowing we're wholly different people inside, but this is something entirely unfamiliar. Amy is the portrait of a bride. Her life suddenly bears no resemblance to mine whatsoever. I'm not a bridezilla, she argues. I'm a perfectionist. I find my list and hold it aloft, waving it to catch her attention. It's a piece of heavy scalloped edge pink stationery that has Olive's to-do list, wedding day edition, written in meticulous calligraphy at the top, and which includes 74 items, ranging from check for symmetry of the sequins on the bridal gown to remove any wilted petals from the table arrangements. Each bridesmaid has her own list, perhaps not quite as long as my maid of honor one, but equally fancy and handwritten. Amy even drew checkboxes so that we can record when each task is completed. Some people might call these lists a little overboard, I say. Those are the same some people, she replies, who'll pay an arm and a leg for a wedding that is half as nice. Right. And they're hiring a wedding planner too, I refer to my list. Wipe condensation off the chairs a half an hour before the ceremony. Amy blows across her fingernails to dry them and lets out a movie villain laugh. Fools. You know what they say about self-fulfilling prophecies, I'm sure. Winning makes you feel like a winner, and then somehow you keep winning. It has to be true because Amy wins everything. She tossed a ticket into a raffle bowl at a street fair and walked home with a set of community theater tickets. She slid her business card into a cup at the Happy Gnome and won free happy hour beers for a year. She's won makeovers, books, movie premiere tickets, a lawnmower, endless t-shirts, and even a car. Of course, she also won the stationery and calligraphy set she used to write the to-do list. All this to say, as soon as Dane Thomas proposed, Amy saw it as a challenge to spare our parents the cost of a wedding. As it happens, Mom and Dad could afford to contribute. They are messy in many ways, but financially is not one of them. But for Amy, getting out of paying for anything is the best kind of game. If pre-engagement Amy thought of contests as a competitive sport, engaged Amy viewed them as the Olympics. No one in our enormous family was surprised then when she successfully planned a posh wedding with 200 guests, a seafood buffet, a chocolate fountain, and multiple colored roses spilling out of every jar, vase, and goblet, and has shelled out at most $1,000. My sister works her ass off to find the best promotions and contests. She reposts every Twitter and Facebook giveaway she can find, and even has an email address that is aptly named AmeliaTorresWins@xmail.com. Finally, convinced that there is no more misbehaving sequins, I lift the hanger from where it's suspended on the metal hook attached to the wall, intending to bring the gown to her. But as soon as I touch it, my sister and cousin scream in unison, and Amy holds up her hands, her matte pink lips in a horrified O. Leave it there, Ollie, she says. I'll come over. With your luck, you'll trip and fall into a candle and it'll go up in a ball of sequin-scented flames. I don't argue. She isn't wrong. Whereas Amy is a four-leaf clover, I have always been unlucky. I don't say that to be theatrical or because I seem unlucky in comparison. It is an objective truth. Google Olive Torres, Minnesota, and you'll find dozens of articles and comment threads dedicated to the time I climbed into one of those claw crane arcade games and got stuck. I was six, and when the stuffed animal I captured didn't drop directly into the chute, I decided to go in and get it. I spent 2 hours inside the machine surrounded by a lot of hard, coarse-furred, chemical-smelling toy bears. I remember looking out through the handprint smudge plexiglass and seeing an array of frantic faces shouting muffled orders to each other. Apparently, when the owners of the arcade explained to my parents that they didn't actually own the game and therefore they didn't have the key to get inside, the Edina Fire Department was called, followed quickly by a local news crew who diligently documented my extraction. Fast forward 26 years and thank you, YouTube, there's still video floating around. To date, nearly 500,000 people have watched it and discovered that I was stubborn enough to climb in and unlucky enough to catch my belt loop on the way out, leaving my pants behind with the bears. This is but one story of many. Yes, Amy and I are identical twins. We are both 5'4", with dark hair that misbehaves when there's even a hint of humidity, deep brown eyes, upturned noses, and matching constellation of freckles. But that's where the similarities end. Our mother always tried to embrace our differences so that we'd feel like individuals rather than a matching set. I know her intentions were good, but for as far as I can remember, our roles were set. Amy is an optimist who looks for the silver lining. I tend to assume the sky is falling. When we were three, Mom even dressed us as Care Bears for Halloween. Amy was sunshine, bear, I was grumpy. And it's clear the self-fulfilling prophecy works in both directions. From the moment I watched myself picking my nose behind a piece of grimy plexiglass on the 6 o'clock news, my luck never really improved. I've never won a coloring contest or an office pool, not even a lottery ticket or a game of pin the tail on the donkey. I have, however, broken a leg when someone fell backwards down the stairs and knocked me over. They walked away unscathed. Constantly drew bathroom duty during every extended family vacation for a 5-year stretch, was peed on by a dog while sunbathing in Florida, have been crapped on by innumerable birds over the years, and when I was 16, I was struck by lightning. Yes, really, and lived to tell the tale, but had to go to summer school because I missed 2 weeks of classes at the end of the year. Amy likes to sunnily remind me that I once guessed the correct number of shots left in a half-empty bottle of tequila, but after drinking most of them in celebratory glee and subsequently throwing it all back up again, that win didn't feel particularly fortunate. Amy removes the free dress from the hanger and steps into it just as our mother comes into the room from her also free adjoining suite. She gasps so dramatically when she sees Amy in the gown, I'm sure both Amy and I share the thought. Olive somehow managed to stain the wedding dress. I inspect it to make sure I haven't. All clear? Amy exhales, motioning for me to carefully zip her up. Mommy, you scared the crap out of us. With a head full of enormous Velcro curlers and a half-finished glass of, you guessed it, free, champagne in hand, and her lips thick with red gloss, Mom is managing an impressive impersonation of Joan Crawford, if Joan Crawford had been born in Guadalajara. Oh, mija, you look so beautiful. Amy glances up at her, smiles, and then seems to remember, with immediate separation anxiety, the list she left all the way across the room. Hitching her billowing dress up, she shuffles to the table. Mom, you gave the DJ the thumb drive with the music? Our mother drains her glass before daintily taking a seat on the plush couch. See, Amelia, I gave your little plastic stick to the white man with cornrows in the terrible suit. Mom's magenta dress is impeccable, her tan legs crossed at the knee as she accepts another flute of champagne from the bridal suite attendant. He has a gold tooth, Mom adds, but I'm sure he's very good at his job. Amy ignores this and her confident check mark scratches through the room. She doesn't really care if the DJ isn't up to our mother's standards, or even her own. He's new in town and she won his services in a raffle at the hospital where she works as a hematology nurse. Free beats, talented every time. Ollie, Amy says, eyes never straying from the list in front of her, you need to get dressed too. Your dress is hanging on the back of the bathroom door. I immediately disappear into the bathroom with a mock salute. Yes, ma'am. If there's one question we're asked more than any other, it's which one of us is oldest. I would think it's fairly obvious, because although Amy is a mere 4 minutes older than me, she is without a doubt the leader. Growing up, we played what she wanted to play, went where she wanted to go, and while I may have complained, for the most part, I happily followed. She can talk me into almost anything. Which is exactly how I ended up in this dress. Amy. I threw open the bathroom door, horrified by what I'd just seen in the small bathroom mirror. Maybe it's the light, I think, hitching up the shiny green monstrosity and making my way to the larger mirror in the suite. Wow, it's definitely not the light. Olive, she answers back. I look like a giant can of 7-Up. Yes, girl, Jules sings. Maybe someone will finally crack that thing open. Mom clears her throat. I glower at my sister. I was wary of being a bridesmaid in a winter wonderland-themed wedding in January, so my only request as the maid of honor was that my dress wouldn't have a scrap of red velvet or white fur. I see now that I should have been more specific. Did you actually choose this dress? I pointed to my abundance of cleavage. This was intentional? Amy tilts her head, studying me. I mean, intentional in the sense that I won it at a raffle at Valley Baptist? All the bridesmaids' dresses in one go. Just think of the money I saved you. We are Catholic, not Baptist, Amy. I tuck on the fabric. I look like a hostess at O'Grea's on St. Patty's Day. I realize my primary error, not seeing this dress until today, but my sister has always had impeccable taste. On the day of the fittings, I was in my boss's office pleading, unsuccessfully, not to be one of the 400 scientists in the company was letting go. I know I was distracted when she sent me a photo of the dress, but I don't remember it looking this satiny or this green. I turn to see it from another angle, and dear God, it looks even worse from the back. It doesn't help that a few weeks of stress baking have made me, let's say, a little fuller in the chest and hips. Put me in the back of every picture, and I could be your green screen. Jules comes up behind me, tiny and toned in her own shiny green ensemble. You look hot in it, trust me. Mommy, Amy calls. Doesn't that neckline show off Ollie's collarbones and her chichis? Mom's glass has been refilled once more, and she takes another long, slow drink. The rest of the bridesmaids tumble into the suite, and there's a loud, collective, emotional uproar over how beautiful Amy looks in her dress. This reaction is standard in the Torres family. I realize this may sound like an observation of a bitter sibling, but I promise it's not. Amy has always loved attention, and, as evidenced by my screaming on the 6 o'clock news, I do not. My sister practically glows under the spotlight. I am more than happy to help direct the spotlight her way. We have 12 female first cousins, all of us in each other's business 24/7, but with only 7 free dresses included in Amy's prize, hard decisions had to be made. A few cousins are still living on Mount passive-aggressive over it and went in on their own room together to get ready, but it's probably for the best. This room is way too small for that many women to safely maneuver themselves into spandex at the same time anyway. A cloud of hairspray hangs in the air around us, and there are enough curling and flat irons and various bottles littering the counter to keep a decent-sized salon going. Every surface grows either tacky with some sort of styling product or hidden beneath the contents of someone's overturned makeup bag. There's a knock at the suite door, and Jules opens it to find our cousin Diego standing on the other side. 28, gay, and better groomed than I could ever manage, Diego cried sexism when Amy told him he couldn't be part of the bridal party and would have to hang out with the groomsmen. If his expression as he takes in my dress is any indication, he now considers himself blessed. I know, I say, giving up and stepping away from the mirror. It's a little tight, he guesses. No. Shiny? I glare at him. No. Slutty? I was going to say green. He tilts his head as he steps around me, absorbing it from every angle. I was going to offer to do your makeup, but it'd be a waste of my time, he waves his hand. No one will be looking at your face today. No slut-shaming, Diego, my mother says, and I notice she didn't agree with his assessment. She just told him not to shame me for it. I give up on worrying about the dress and how much boob I'm going to have on display for the entire wedding and reception and turn back to the chaos of the room. While cousins static guard each other and ask opinions on shoes, a dozen conversations are happening. Natalia dyed her brown hair to blonde and is convinced she has ruined her face. Diego agrees. The underwire popped out of Stephanie's strapless bra, and Tia Maria is explaining just how to tape up her boobs instead. Cammy and Zima are arguing over whose spanks are whose, and Mom is polishing off her glass of champagne. But amid all the noise and chemicals, Amy's attention is back on her list. Olive, have you checked in with Dad? Is he here yet? I'll pause there. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but this book is just so cute. It's so interesting to see Olive and Ethan's relationship progress. You can tell that they really, really couldn't stand each other, and then they don't understand how this hatred could turn into something more. Now, I don't want to spoil it and get into too much about what happened, but this is definitely an enemies to lovers trope. It ends exactly how you want it to end as far as a sweet romance book. I think they do it in a really cute way. There's a grand gesture from Ethan. Honestly, it's just so cute. If you like romance novels that don't really feature a lot of the sexy side, then I definitely recommend this book for you.